So, hi, you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. I'm here with a bunch of people, 1, 2, 4, 6, 7, 8 of us. And we're just going to creatively tell a story together. That's what we're doing today. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks. And how are you doing?
Muy bien.
All right. So those are just two of the many people here. So first I'll recap our story so far, and then we'll just go around and we'll each say what we're doing at this like particular juncture. When we last left off, Lyra, the elf lord, the kind of inspiring leader of this motley band of weirdos and funky guys. Yeah. She had gone. Can you remind us of what you did and how you captured her? We are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
I don't actually remember.
Oh, you don't. Hold it really close to your mouth.
Okay.
You went in the temple and then you found her and you took her body out in the chessboard and like you had to go in the.
Oh, okay. Yes.
In the whirlpool and yeah.
Okay, so I entered the temple of. Who is it? Oh, no, we were in a party, actually. It was in a party. So I was at this party, and I went there, and I saw my estranged father, who is now apparently going to marry a dear friend's daughter, which I don't approve of. She's only 12.
And what does she look like?
What does she look like? She looks like a... She has a spider's butt... And the human upper body, or human upper body, and then yeah, she's about 12 years old, which I suppose is adult age for a spider. Yes. Yeah, so in this party, I went into a chessboard and saved our cleric's body as she was astral projecting to a different body in the primaterial plane. Yeah, I don't remember how that happened.
That before, the
oh, really? Oh.
Like a few sessions ago.
Oh, okay. No, I have like barely any recollection of that. I can't remember all of the amazing things that I do for this group as Lyra Silvertongue, leader of the Starlight Troopers, Giant Slayer, Tall Tale Teller, Saver of Unconscious Friends, and many other things. Slayer of Dragons, I don't know if I mentioned that.
And what about your sister? How do you?
My sister? Well, she's very good looking, being that we are identical twins. But otherwise, I think she just makes some very terrible decisions. I mean, the Kraken was just not a good idea. Releasing the Kraken was not a good idea.
Where did she release the Kraken?
She released the Kraken in the orderly side of heaven. Which was really not their style. They didn't like that very much. It was right next to the temple where we accidentally released demons, 13 demons, and created an abyss hole to hell in the temple of Mishikale, the goddess of good, which was not looked upon very well by the authorities there. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Cool. Thank you, Andrea. And you're talking about Lyra Silvertongue, and this is the sister that you were referring to, and her name is Sombrera something, right? Or just Sombrera? Does she have a last name?
I think it ended up being Cheese Lover.
Okay, Sombrera Cheese Lover. How did she get that name, and what's her relationship to Lyra, and what's her story so far?
Great. Well,
you have to hold this.
Okay. In heaven, I happened upon some hill giants, and they were pretty typical, hanging out with a bunch of sheep, who sheep often like to stack, and I think in that case they may have been stacking a bit, just as they do. And they were eating a bunch of cheese, just all types of cheese all day, every day. And I was alone because the rest of my party had just, I don't know where they were, and I just went through a random door and ended up in heaven. And I befriended the hill giants, and I was eating their cheese, as one does, and I didn't realize that it was charmed cheese. And since that fateful day, I have been quite the cheese fiend. And I've collected many types of cheese at this point. I have griffin cheese, moon cheese, purple worm cheese, and many of these cheeses may seem rather illogical to be in existence at all, but I can tell you that they in fact do exist. Besides that, yeah, me and my sister have a bit of a tumultuous relationship, but it's a friendly competition, I would say. It inspires both of us, no pun intended, actually wasn't intended, to be better, I guess. She plays the lute, maybe?
She plays the lute? Is that right? You play the lute?
Lute or lyre.
Now I play the harp.
The harp.
She plays several instruments, and I like to stick mainly to the accordion, and so we differ in that regard, but we still definitely compete in regards to the realm of music.
She has horns, you have a tail?
Yeah, she has horns, I have a tail. So we're different in that regard, and I sometimes can be more rash and impulsive than her, but I think it ultimately leads to interesting things happening. Sure, she could say releasing the Kraken was a bad idea, but I think that it was a memorable thing, and what else really matters besides the things that we remember at the end of the day.
Yeah, because you're both bards, and you're both interested in increasing your renown, your reputation, you know, in the world and in all the multiverse.
Of course.
And what's your current delusion that you're operating under?
I believe that I am the best in everything I do, which really wasn't, it's not that far off from before, but just a little turned up to like 110%.
All right, great.
So you're still listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. Oh gosh, this is going so fast. So you guys, once you guys are done, we'll first go around while this is happening. And Lizzie, I'd like to talk to you. So you, we were trying to save these clerics that you had protected and encouraged us to save these 50 devout, pious, good people that we found like on the edge of a volcano, among, you know, captured by these dark dwarves, and we dark minded, they actually have fair skin, and then we took them onto a flying volcanic ship, and then we sailed the ship, and then the ship crash landed, and you discovered a medallion that would control their minds. And so the ship crash landed, and you know, and then that was kind of where we left off with you. And then, I guess then we went to heaven. We took the clerics to heaven. And then, oh, lo and behold, it turned out that something was wrong. And what happened after that?
Well, of course, me trying to be the good person and seek guidance from my goddess, Mishkala. I took my clerics with me, and once entering the temple, they kind of exploded and demons came out. So I guess someone kind of messed them up a little bit.
How did that make you feel when they 13 clerics exploded and demons came out?
I mean, just horrible guilt. I should have known that there were demons living inside them. I don't know how I would have known, but I should have. Taking them into my goddess's temple was just the worst thing I could have done. And so I still feel overwhelming guilt. And I wish to get forgiveness from my goddess. I don't feel worthy of her gifts.
Yeah, that's great. And then maybe unbeknownst to you, you turned yourself in to the authorities in heaven. And they were watching you in this prison. And they had made a double of you so that it would be harder to free you. But we found both the double and you, our group of adventurers. And in fact, Sombrera, who we were just talking to, the cheese lover, and Lyra were both instrumental in freeing you from this prison. And Sombrera summoned a gold dragon that ultimately ripped the top off a tower in order to get you out. Now, the only rub was that at the same time she gave the dragon a card that changed its alignment to evil, and then that created all these other problems, and then you became the prisoner of this gold dragon in his giant lair. And he lives in an intelligent lair, and the lair didn't want to have anything to do with him anymore once he became so nasty. So it locked him out, but you were still locked inside. And then most recently, Lyra came in and she traveled and appeared almost like a ghost to you, and then she led you free. And that's the very latest thing that happened. And so now you're looking for, apparently you're looking for salvation, right, from your goddess? Okay. Meanwhile, in the world, okay, here's a quick note for everybody. So in the world at this time, the sort of story that we're doing is that there's this tree that kind of, that's this cult we call the world tree, and it goes through and it sort of keeps all the planes of existence in alignment. And there are these different avatars who are responsible for this tree. Some of them come to destroy it, and other ones come to protect it. And the mystery that we've been trying to solve is who is there to help it and who is there to destroy it. And one of the characters who's on our journey is, like, specifically sort of appointed to kind of, like, protect this tree, or at least that's the kind of goal or quest that he's taken on for himself. He's a druid. So we'll talk to him in a moment, but I just wanted you to know that that's the kind of the overall frame for what we're doing. And then within that, we do whatever, and we often make the world a much worse place accidentally. But that's the overall thing. And we've identified some of the avatars for the tree. One of them is a giant, almost like a giant robot, like a Megatron or something, where that can be piloted from inside just by a little person. And currently, it's a fire giant, and currently it's holding up the world tree because one of the other avatars is appointed by this, I call it a mantle, but it's sort of just like a crown with a cape off the back, that you give to people, and currently Sombrero is wearing it, and last time she was by the tree, she knocked it over. So this other guy is holding it up, and that's the current sort of state of things with the tree. And now Lizzie's come back, and she still has the clerics, and they somehow work into this grand scheme, and meanwhile, we're being chased by vampires, and this dust devil kind of thing. But without further ado, I wanted to introduce Cerulean and have him tell us a little bit about, like, where he's from, his adventures, and the world tree.
Yeah. So Cerulean's a really old guy. He was in his 80s last time we saw him, but then he died due to old age and was sort of reincarnated into the form of a what is owl bear? Yeah.
How many forms has he taken?
Oh, well, he's taken a lot of forms, of course, because he's a natural shapeshifter. Like, that's his race. And also, he's a druid, so druids also get the ability to shapeshift. So not only his race, but also his class let him shapeshift a lot. So he often took the forms of, like, I don't know, bears and things like that. And so the owl bear is not that weird for him. In fact, he could just morph back into his other shape if he wanted to anytime. But, he's true neutral. But, you know, like, true neutral doesn't mean that you're, like, good or evil. It's kind of like you kind of choose what the neutral point is, I think, and you kind of stick to that. So that's what druids usually are. They're trying to maintain the balance. But who says what the balance is? And he's decided that all creatures that are not from the prime material plane should not be on the material plane. So he's sort of like a Van Helsing trying to, like, get rid of all the demons, although it, like, it leads him to, like, try to exterminate entire groups and be totally evil at times.
Yeah, like, why did he want to kill the dinosaurs?
Oh, yeah, so he tried to kill a whole island full of dinosaurs because they didn't belong to this time, and apparently they came from either another plane or another planet.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to just wipe them out, and pretty evil in that regard.
What was his plan to wipe them out?
Oh, I think he was animating trees. He was animating a bunch of trees in order to go and hunt them for him, because he couldn't deal with all of them himself. The whole island, like, of many different species.
And, yeah. And how does he talk? Like, let's have him.
Oh, yeah. So whenever
he talks kind of like an old man all the time. Even when he changes his shape, he still talks like this. So if he's an eagle, he talks like this. If he's a baby, he talks like this. If he's a fairy, he talks like this. And, he's basically always just like this.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Aaron. So that's about everybody. There's one other character who's part of this this core group who's present today, who actually plays two guys who've been split in half. One is good and one is evil. I think, Lizzie, when you started with us, he was just good. Had he switched yet?
He was just good, and then he had put on a bunch of cursed stuff and was turning evil, but I had not met the evil evil trident yet.
Okay. And what, do you remember what, he had these oversized boots, do you remember that? He had these giant oversized boots, they're made for a troll that he put on. They're great, he can walk over things with them, like over pits and things like that, but they're oversized so he looks kind of foolish. And a medallion he'd put on. So yes, yeah, so since then he faced his double, the other evil, the good side came out in another guy. And so now Ilir plays two characters, sometimes the good one, sometimes the bad one. And most recently, a plot twist is that his good side, or the evil side, the evil one was hit with a meteor thrown by this giant robot, and then his medallions embedded in the meteor as he fell to the ground. So he is now potentially back to being a good ranger. And he'll have two characters who might be on the same side. Yeah. The other one is wearing medallions that turn him good, but is evil underneath. Because they met in the mirror world in this interesting subplot. So, anyway, without further ado, I think we'll start the main session. You're listening to Fun with Fritz. This is Radio Free Brooklyn. It's only been a few minutes. Okay, and then there's one other character. Actually, this might be more fun for you guys to each say one sentence about him. For me, anyway, this is the character that I play. And I'm also kind of setting up the story world, so it's a little bit unfair for me to play a character at all, I feel like. It's because he's on the inside. I know what is potentially going to happen next, and I know about the monsters. But I tried to keep him fair and not get him in the way. But anyway, I wonder, what's your guys' impression of Gnarls of Charles?
He's generally a pretty nice guy, but he has some dubious judgment at times, and he rages a lot.
That's a new thing.
It's a new thing, but it's certainly present.
Well, I've known Gnarls Charles for the entire adventure, and, starting from the very beginning, he was always kind of impulsive, but ever since he started wearing that helm of foolhardiness, it's really taken off from there. But he, at times, has had moments of brilliance. I mean, he met some different mages and created his own spells, like Gnarls' Fragrant Cloud and, you know, other... Gnarls' Vertical Stripes, was that yours? Or was that Twuxnux's? Oh, that was Twuxnux's. Sorry. But, you know, Gnarls Charles has made some technological advancements in the world of magic, and, you know, despite the helm of foolhardiness, he's managed to do some good things, somewhat.
Yeah, I'd say, basically, like these other two, Gnarls is a brilliant fool. Like, he just comes up with the wackiest things, and sometimes they work like a charm, and other times it's like a fireball in your face or something. So it's dubious judgment, but often very creative and brilliant as well. And he was the best friend of a half-orc barbarian who I played earlier in the campaign, who's now dead. And he trapped like the body of that half-orc barbarian, Shaka, in a gem that he wears around his neck. And he feels, due to the helm of foolhardiness, that Shaka is sort of like inhabiting his soul, or like his soul is inhabiting Gnarls, and he's started to turn into like a barbarian and starting to like rage randomly at times, which doesn't make him a very good spellcaster at the moment, but it could make him a very good combatant in the long run. So
what does Cerulean think of
him? Oh yeah, you know, I think Cerulean and he,
oh yeah, well, you know, that fella's not all there, I'd say. Not much more to say about that.
What are you saying about me, Cerulean? Who are you talking to?
Well, no, not just talking to myself. No, nobody.
No, but they have a little bit of a disagreement due to Cerulean trying to exterminate all the dinosaurs. And Gnarls didn't want him to do that, so Gnarls was sabotaging his plan, and it was...
What about the underwear of anti-genocide?
Oh yeah, there's so, I vaguely recall the underwear of anti-genocide, where it like sort of reverses a genocide that happens. Yeah, and I think Gnarls kind of invented that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Madeira gave
no, he wished for it because he got a boon from a very powerful druid named Madeira, who was the druid kind of overseeing this island, and it was the underwear of anti-genocide. Is that reverse genocide?
Reverse genocide.
Yeah. So he was trying to wipe them out. Cerulean was, and then, of course, Gnarls was trying to undo it in every way possible, including a very, very fancy pair of underwear.
My character Alaria finds Gnarls to be terribly annoying.
What?
Even though he's very loyal. She keeps it to herself that she's very annoyed because he's very loyal and listens to her. But she just finds his impulsiveness and stupidity to be very grating on her. Much of the rest of the party, but she just holds it in order to achieve her goals.
He's what?
I think Ilaria's biggest problem with Gnarls is that he ruins her orderliness. She always wants things to be just so, and he's always casting a stinking cloud in the middle of your party, or I don't know what, like putting some Ivard's tentacles in a really bad spot so you everybody's stuck. But when, I don't know, sometimes it works.
Cool. Okay, great. And so also today we have a couple of other people. Adam, I'm just curious to ask you, since this is radio and we're sharing with other people, your impression so far, it's kind of going to be disjointed probably and everything, like maybe other listeners, but what's your impression so far of this thing which you've never, this game which you've never played before and these, like, stories that we're talking about?
I mean, off the bat, it's very complicated, it's very complex. just listening to the names of the characters you guys are in, it's just like another language to me now. It looks exciting though. There's a lot of dice on the table.
There's a really big dice.
Yeah, I'm still actually trying to figure out my character and my position in the story. So I've kind of taken the position of going with like a water sorcerer who is like half human, half angel. Who focuses on like water magic, spells, hexes, heroism, I think is one of my spells, enchantments. I think I'm known as, what is it, the Aquas Enchanter? Yeah. Is that right? can I say my spells?
Sure.
So some of my spells include walking on water, which is really cool. Who doesn't want to walk on water? Controlling weather, summoning water elements, create magical items, creating food, water bolts, which I'm kind of excited to use water bolts. yeah, and that's it. I kind of want to see where I fit in the story. And that's where I'm at.
Okay. Cool, great, thanks. Okay, so there's one other character who we haven't talked about yet. I'll just briefly discuss his history. He's, he started out as a ranger in the inn where we all started. And he immediately attacked the skeleton person who had put together a map that was made up of pieces that each of us brought to the table. So they put together this map, and then since then we'd been kind of following this map, and this skeleton person had turned out to be maybe some kind of ally or something like that. But anyway, he's a seafaring guy, and he started out as a ranger, and his name is Triton. And here, Ilir, I got to interrupt you, and you got to tell us about Triton and the story so far for him.
Oh, Triton was a Triton was like a ranger, sort of a wilderness fighter, sailor. He's sort of a pirate, basically, a defender of the defenseless. And then he came under the influence of an evil amulet and became an evil paladin, which is sort of like a self-righteous prick, but an evil self-righteous prick. And then he met himself in the mirror world. So his archenemy is the opposite of him, which is he's a good person who's being forced to be evil. His enemy is an evil person being forced to be good. And they've sworn to destroy each other.
Yeah, and then recently that took a twist. Tell us about the very latest development.
The very latest thing is I'm no longer evil, so we could potentially work together. I still imagine they'd be rather suspicious of each other. So.
And what are their two names?
One is Triton. That's Triton Costner. He's a sailor from Waterworld.
Which is cool. You're the water maid.
Yeah.
Yes, we're related. We're water related, and he's from the water world. So, and he is the father of all the dark elves because he slept with 49 of them, and so all the dark elves in the world are also have a last name of Costner. He's very deadpan in his dramatic delivery, and his opposite.
Which the elves go for?
They do. They like that deadpan, hard to get guy because they're usually hard to get themselves, a little standoffish. Right. He's stoic, and then the. His opposite is Triton X100, which is a brand of soap, because he's so squeaky clean that he's super clean.
Yeah. Cool.
He's a brand of soap.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Ilir. I didn't realize that it was a soap.
You have soap without water.
Yeah, no, that's so great. Okay, and Safara. Safara's also just joining us today, but have you ever played this game before?
Yes, I have.
Okay, great. So tell us about your character. You didn't get to hear this about the other characters, but tell us about yours.
Well, I kind of really and truly forgot where my character grew up, like what the name of it was, but he was in a secret society. It was very dark. It's like very, you know, like underworld related, but he was actually a double spy. Because he doesn't give a fuck about them. I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to cuss on the radio?
I don't think
so. It just came out like dead happened. Serious. Okay. Yeah. So, I felt so horrible. But no, like, they really and truly believe that he wants to help them because he has a particular amount of skills that actually go with what they want, but it's higher. And so he's using that opportunity to be on their good side to get what he needs because what they do is a medium of what he actually wants to get. So he's getting close to like certain people that are high up in the good side because he's double spying for them. Basically, he's double spying for them, but not really like he gives a fuck about either side. He actually wants what he wants. He wants something that is close to his alignment and his background. And that's what all he wants. And he doesn't want to do any evil with it. He just wants it.
And he's, what is he? He's a wood elf who lives in the mountains?
In the wild.
In the wild?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What does he look like?
He has originally really long black hair and pale skin, but sometimes it's tanned. I mean, like, when I saw it, the guy made a drawing of it, and he made me slightly tanned, but he's light as hell. And, I mean, that's it. He's just really tall. He's not brolic.
What kind of clothes?
Green, like, looking like military stuff because he has to blend in. He sneaks up and he does distance spells, you know, like he's really sneaky.
Okay,
we want anything more?
Yeah, tell me one thing that he did, like, before today. Like, what's something that he did?
In the other game?
Yeah.
In the other game, they were like some royal people, like regal people. I really can't remember who they are and what they were about, but they were, you know, like in the area. And he's an uppity kind of person because he's an elf, you know. He's a certain kind of way about him. He really doesn't think that he is narcissistic, but he knows that he can blend in really well, like a shapeshifter. So they thought he was kind of royal. They didn't know where. So he makes up lies as he goes along in life. And and they believed that he was, you know, a high elf somewhere, but he really wasn't. He was just acting something out because he found out that the daughter, which is a princess of one of the family, is close to somebody who can get him to what he needs to get. And so he was trying to blend in at some affair, at some royal gathering. And that was that.
Okay, great. This is wonderful. Okay, so we're going to start. Okay, so I'm going to kind of cut from where we left off and sort of jump ahead a little bit in time, and that way some of the logistics of how we got together and whatever can kind of imagine. Because I didn't do that last time, and I felt like we ended up getting bogged down in the transition. Took the whole game rather than just being in the new spot. So, So one thing I just at this point in the story, the World Tree like was really at risk, but then we sort of temporarily kind of like staved off that risk. We both created the problem and then sort of solved the problem. Like, you became an avatar for the World Tree Sombrera. You knocked it over on top of a silver dragon that was attacking us because it was the father of one of the other characters, and had made a pact and had to give up its children to this other demon, which it didn't want to do, so it would rather kill its own children than give them up. And anyway, that's why the father was there. And Gnarls had unfortunately freed the guy from jail. He was just in an ordinary town jail, but his curse was such that as long as he was held behind bars, he didn't have to, you know, do anything. And of course, Gnarls, every prison he's gone to so far, including the prison in heaven, he's broken out all of the criminals. Himself being a criminal, he's like, you know, he's sympathetic to that cause. So, and Gnarls is the wizard that my character kind of is, yeah. And yeah, he wears this helmet that makes him foolhardy and starting to turn him into a barbarian. But anyway, so that was kind of where we left off with the World Tree, and then there was a cocktail party that was going on at the same time, and that's where you confronted Lord Joff, was at that cocktail party. And Andrea, who's playing Lyra Silvertongue, has the smallest dice I've ever seen. They're like as big as a tiny, they look like earrings. They're as big as like a baby's fingernail. But anyway, I thought we would go around just one more time and kind of knowing where we are at the end, and Safar and Adam, you guys don't have to do this, but what, or you can if you want, but what is your character doing kind of like between then and now? Like what did they want? What's the resolution that you wanted, say, with Lord Joff? Or what is the... I mean, and you weren't there, but, like, you know, we just got you back, and some of your clerics are on the island still. If you want to find them, you can. There's still, like, 13...
They're not mind-controlled anymore, though.
They are... They could be if you still have your amulet. It kind of wore off, but you haven't tried again in a while, so you never know. But you can use it actually to locate them, because they still have those worms in their ears that were allowing you to mind control them. So anyway, we'll just go around quickly, and I just want you to say what your character kind of did since the last one. And Aaron, do you want to start? Or okay, let's start with Cerulean. And maybe say it in your character's voice.
So, there was a dryad inhabiting the World Tree. And her soul had been separated from her body, and it was slowly driving her insane. And my goal was to help her and reunite her with her soul. And I did find out that Triton had actually rescued that separated soul from another plane and had it there, but it was not clear to him that it belonged to the Dryad. And so working with Cerulean, myself, we managed to reunite them. And I don't know if she's all right, or if she's still suffering, or... Oh, we're going to roll and find out. Here we go. Hey, a 13, that's pretty good.
70%.
Okay, yeah, she's kind of 70% there, but she's not all crazy and doesn't want it to just burn anymore, I suppose, but yeah. That's what I was doing.
She still wants to turn dwarves into wood dwarves.
Oh, wants to turn dwarves into wood dwarves still, which is...
Holding you to that.
Oh, I see. And, oh, yeah, she actually made me promise to do a task for her, and it was to turn the dwarves into wood dwarves, which I don't think they want to do. But I still got to do it.
That's great. That's great. But, yeah, but and not only that, you befriend the dryad. And she gives you a little token. It's a pair of pixie wings. And they're actually with a harness, so you can wear them. You can put them on your finger, or you could probably put them somewhere else. It's an expanding elastic, like it's made out of spider.
Can you wear it like a barrette?
You can wear it like a barrette, yeah. Yeah. And they allow you like to levitate for short periods of time, randomly, yeah. And now, what about you, Lyra? You were at the party with Lord Joff. There was a beholder there who had been turned good because of a card. That same card from the gold dragon had been taken from the gold dragon and stuck onto his back. Yeah, you can resolve it.
Resolve?
Like, you can say what you want. Like, he said what he wanted to happen with the dryad and the world tree and then rolled. You can kind of do the same thing.
Well, when we last left off, We had chased evil Triton into the chessboard, I believe.
Yeah.
We're trying to kill him. What? Oh. Well, the last time we left off, I had victoriously fended off Triton's evil advanced plans. And he was holding a poor celestial being hostage on the end of a chain, and I was heroically going to cut off Triton's hand to save him as they were chained hand to hand. But unfortunately, the roles were not with me that day, and he escaped with his hand. But he did not escape justice, as we saw later, when a meteor shot out of the chessboard with him pasted to the front of it. Luckily, this meteor singed off all of Lord Joff's hair, like all of it. He looks like he has alopecia now. And Triton's daughter, who is going to marry him, was really just reviled by that. She's half spider. I mean, she likes it hairy, so he just wasn't her type. And she broke off the betrothal, you know. It was really harsh for him. He also has a stripe on his scalp of burned skin from this meteor. And it revealed his evil nature, actually.
And what about Lyra? What does Lyra do? What's her resolution for Lyra?
Oh, for Lyra?
Because Lord Joff's her father.
Yes, Lord Joff is Lyra's father, but he abandoned her when she was young. And right. She was raised by her tavern wench mother in the city. What was the city called?
That's the city of...
in the city
Lost
of...
Pages.
Lost Pages, yes.
That's cool. Okay.
Yeah, where she grew up as kind of an urchin. And so, you know, Lyra doesn't really like Lord Joff at all. And so, having seen his downfall with his betrothal and his hair getting burned off, she viciously mocks him in front of the entire party. She makes a song about it. And, he's really embarrassed now. I don't know if he can, like, everybody. This song is really, well, the song is really catchy, and she hopes that people will just keep singing it and, like, humming it, and, yeah, and she's going to, well, hopefully, she thinks that people will just lose so much esteem for him that he will lose all influence.
Okay, great. Let's see what you roll.
And I roll a 14. Yeah.
It seems like he's on the outs.
Yeah.
He's making a last-ditch effort.
So your song is catchy. Everybody's singing it. And he's making a last-ditch effort just at a straight coup. I mean, he's already in charge. He's trying to take over a neighboring city to consolidate power. He figures two is better than one. And he's using the Moth Clan to do it. But yeah. Yeah, you reveal that he's behind the Moth Clan, and he's working closely with the Dark Elves. All right, and Cassidy, or Sombrero. You talk to Sombrero.
Okay. Great. So, I guess last that happened, I knocked over the World Tree, and at the same time became an avatar of the World Tree, so that is interesting. But at this very same cocktail party, there was this diva that Evil Triton had on a chain that I actually once had a bit of a tryst with in a prison, you know, as they do. as does happen, of course. But we hadn't seen each other in quite a while, because sometimes this just happens to me. I find myself entangled with someone, and then all of a sudden I've just forgotten about them. And
tell us about your recent husband.
Ah, yes, my recent husband. So I had this thing with a frog prince. I don't really need to talk about it right now. But it so happened that there's this thing that, like, I had to marry a prince or else I would become a frog, and that just didn't really seem like it was a good choice for that day, or really for any day, unless I had a, unless there was a lot of water around and maybe I needed to, or, like, the only food available was flies, and I had to, that would make sense to be a frog, but not the case. So I was like, well, I don't really want to marry the frog prince because that's too easy, and it doesn't seem like, he doesn't really seem like that good of a guy anymore. And so I just happened to meet this guy, French Fry, who happened to be a prince and also happened to be a French Fry. And he, curiously, well, not so curiously because he is a French Fry, existed always horizontally, whereas I typically am used to existing vertically, but we made it work. He said that I needed to take him to the moon, and so we're going back to those sheep who like to stack, so I was able to gather, oh, give or take 8 million sheep and stack them to get to the moon, and we had a good time there, and I was like, yeah, I guess I'll marry you. And he did give me some cheese, because the moon, that was where I got the moon cheese from. And so I was like, well, with an offer like that, how can I refuse? Even though you turn colors when you feel certain emotions, and so there's no hiding anything. Maybe for the best, but it was a little too obvious sometimes. Our marriage was sort of weird because I had to be pretty accommodating about the whole horizontal thing, and so half of the wedding was horizontal and half of it was vertical, and people sort of had to take their pick, but if you got there late, you just had to lay down. Then I had to go do some things, you know, like I have a life to live, and all of a sudden, French Fry ended up turning in, my friend ended up turning into French Fry, and that just sort of made things weird because he really didn't like being a French Fry, and I feel like it sort of opened my eyes to, like, maybe there are some negative aspects to a relationship with a potato. And since then, we've sort of drifted apart.
You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. We're talking in the backyard in Queens near a train station. You might hear a train sometimes. So cool. And this is Fun with Fritz. Lizzie, what about you, the kind of, like, you weren't actually here, but there was a time when you were here, which was the time before. So I don't want to give Lizzie a hard time. She was here every day, early even, for the first 6 weeks, and then we missed her for a long time. But she's back today.
Yay! Okay, so Alaria has been repenting for what she feels like are the sins she's committed against her goddess. She's located the rest of her clerics and checked that they're not under mind control anymore and returned them to their respective temples, places of worship all around the world. So that's been her mission, her first step in repenting to Mishakal. And now I have to roll, otherwise it doesn't happen. And it all goes to shit. Which it probably does, it's a six.
So what you discover is that they have lost their clerical powers. And they don't know where they're from. And so you're stuck with them for now.
More people to control my army! Awesome. So, I mean, she's okay with it.
Alright. Oh, and I forgot to have you roll. You just told us about the past. What about now? I mean, it was great to hear about French Fry, but what, now that he's lost to you, and you're an abandoned wife, as it were.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah. With maybe, or did you guys ever, or do you have little French Fries, not even on the wedding night?
Well,
should we roll?
Okay.
So if you roll high, you get to decide.
Okay. Very high. 17.
Okay, you can choose. So what happened?
We don't have children. That's all you need to know.
Okay, great. So. Potato, So you can, interspecies can work, and even intergenus or family, but not
inter-food groups.
Yeah. Or inter-kingdom. Right, okay.
Yeah. They have to be, like, meat group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but tell us, what are you attempting to do since the last time? Like, she was trying to take the clerics back. Lyra was trying to dethrone Lord Joff. Cerulean was trying to reunite the dryad with its soul.
Well, I guess there are a couple things. I did want to free the diva, but I don't really know where he went.
Oh, okay, roll that. That's fine. So you'll free him, you'll take off his chains, as it were.
Great. Oh, maybe not.
Okay, so you get attached to the diva. they're chains of, she rolled a three. So they're chains of, like, gripping and grabbing. And so you guys are now not attached at the hip, but you're just, your hands are chained together.
Great.
He's appalled that you're wearing the hand of Orcus.
Oh, right. We didn't discuss that.
Yeah, that was another one of Gnarls'
enemies. What happened there, Lyra?
Well, Lyra Silvertongue, she has this sword, a vorpal blade of from belonging to Loth's sister, who we've discovered is named Sosuria Costner. And so knowing the blade's name, she has the power to cut off anyone's hand, provided that she rolls a 15 or higher. And because of that, the sword has gained a second name, Hands Bane, and has cut off probably 24 hands to date, not all from the same people or monsters. One of them is one of the people who's, or creatures who's had their hands removed is Orcus, who actually had both hands cut off at one point, but reattached one, only to have the other one stolen by our party. Yes. And so we'd stolen one of his hands, and we're keeping it inside of a bag of holding, I believe. Until one day when we were in heaven, during the great escape with the evil gold dragon, the gold dragon was wreaking havoc, and Sombreris, for some reason, decided to jump in front of my sword and cut her own hand off. And Gnarls, in his foolhardiness, thought it would be great to replace her hand with the hand of Orcus, which, by the way, doesn't go with her outfit at all, and is also the size of a car. And it just, like, I don't know if it's a good look. I don't think it's a good look, personally. But, you know, I respect my sister's choices, I support her, but, man, that was... I've been trying to convince her to let me cut it off, like, again, and just let her have a normal hand again, but she's just not going for it. I don't know. And then she married this guy. I mean, there's so many bad choices. So many bad choices.
She did get to be a princess, though. That was all I knew. That's always been a goal of yours, right? Like being high-born but low-treated. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. My name's Fritz. So I'm here with a group of people in the backyard in Queens, and we're talking about this evolving collaborative story that we've been creating together, and I've been kind of the guiding, I set the scene. And then everybody else plays the characters. But I'm going to interrupt right now. Ilir, I got to interrupt you right now. Tell me... So we all went around, and we said the one thing that our character did sort of since the last time you wanted to accomplish. You have your two guys. And the last that we knew of, Evil Triton was no longer Evil Triton, because one of the amulets was embedded in this meteor, and he fell to the ground, and then the other amulet started to burn a brand into his flesh. Yeah. Because it burns people who are good. And so that shows us that he's no longer under the influence, at least, of the
amulet.
Of that amulet. Yeah. And then there's the other Triton who was going after him, who's also there. Yeah. So just tell me what the two do, and then you can roll a die to see if it accomplished.
X100 wants to fix this problem with making, like, destroying the Temple of Mishigal in heaven. He's going to make a Temple of Mishigal in hell, because it seems like a better at neighborhood. He's not that bright. Well, it's cheap real estate. There's 666 levels. I'm going to use this big dice. I don't like that one. But
18.
Hey. That's pretty good. So I'm pretty successful there.
You successfully built a temple.
The beginnings of a temple, yeah.
And you got a bunch of fallen demons. Tell us who.
I have a fallen demon. So you have fallen angels in like all these stories in the Bible. So we decided you have the opposite. You could have a fallen demon where they become. Why not? Like, why do things only become evil? Like they became good. So like, there's the evil crab man who's become good. Maybe an evil monkey. And then Triton has a fallen angel. Evil Triton has a fallen angel, so he is going to try and build a temple also on the evil plane, but he wants to rule it. It's different. It's slightly more selfish intent.
Okay.
So we'll see. Three. He may not make it.
Spanish to heaven.
He may not make it. He can't rule it.
So, and which Triton is this?
Evil.
But which, X100 or Triton?
Triton.
Okay, Triton. Who's now?
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
a failure at trying to build this his own temple in the abyss. He ends up, let's see. He ends up...
Those are mosquitoes. Maybe he has to go to quest in heaven to do that.
Yeah, he needs to get things from heaven to establish the temple in hell. So therefore he's in heaven for that reason.
Right.
Yeah, because he has a longer road to do what he wants to do. So it's part of what he wants to do, but it takes him off of the path a little bit. It's like a side quest.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So Triton went to heaven to try to do the same thing because he also wanted to...
Yes, but he wants to...
Who did you roll for first? The Triton X100? X100. So X100 successfully built the temple to Mishkal in hell. And Evil Triton wants to rule it. Oh, okay, so this is what happens. Triton is the lowest paid sub-acolyte employee of the whole thing. So everyone is over him. He's the bottom. Yeah, there's an intelligent mold on the door that he takes orders from. Exactly. Yeah. So he's just oppressed. And as a result of this oppression, you know, maybe his alignment is shifting in some way. It's your choice if you want to shift it. Okay, cool. So, okay, here we go. So this is the beginning for us. So we've all accomplished our various things, and I'll just lay the scene. It's just a place. So we start out. It's a beautiful forest. There are a lot of animated plants. However, yeah, there are it's a crawling grass. The grass kind of crawls around, and there are no animals. But all of the roles of animals have been taken over by plants. So, you know, like there's a Venus flytrap that can also run really fast, you know, and it's pretty large. It eats like man-sized or human-sized creatures. Yeah. And this is a
cow that eats little animals that are stuck in the ground instead of plants.
Oh. Right? Like, so there's a plant cow, instead of eating grass, it eats little like worms or eels.
Yeah.
Or creatures, yes. Small animals, grazes on animals instead of animals grazing on plants.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I like that. Because there's this transitional zone where there are still animals.
But they're taking the plant.
Or at least right.
Worms anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a renowned and known forest, and we're all there for a different reason. Lyra has come there because this is the forest where our things are taken to. And you've heard that your little mouse, Dormouse, is here. And your original holy symbol is buried somewhere in this forest. And if you don't get it soon, because your god has taken off, has left her temple, she's no longer in heaven, you may lose all of your powers if you don't get this symbol back. Because her... you know, her following and everything is like moved down into the abyss recently. Thanks to Triton X100.
Yeah.
So we're walking along, and or this is the scene, right? And you at first you're just kind of like seeing this scene as if in a dream, and then you see like Lyra, you're there. You pass through a portal to get there. It's that portal that was in the basement where Twuxnux had his laboratory, and you're walking there, and Cerulean has camouflaged himself in some way. He's been waiting for us. He's actually explored this area and he's made some contacts here in this forest, and you find that your spells, you can cast them or the opposite of them in this forest. Yeah. So, you know, you can do wall of flesh instead of wall of stone. You can do, you know, I mean, you can do the other one too, but you also have the opposites, whatever that might mean. So instead of summoning Fae, maybe you can summon the opposite of whatever that, you know, however you'd imagine that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know either. Summon ordinary, you know? Yeah, like people who touch you and nothing happens to you. Yeah. Fools. There was a spell I once read about called Fools Summoning Three. Summons three fools. They hang around you and annoy you. They disrupt other spells being cast. Yeah.
Yeah. Clerks or something.
Yeah. Here's another trope or feature of this adventure. Since we have so many people already, why not have more? So everybody has one person who's following them around. So you guys have gotten to a certain level of renown now where, like, people listen to you and they want to be around you and they're really into you and they love you. And so each of us has a follower, whether or not we want one. And if you can choose one now, and what I want you to do is write the name of your follower next to, because you guys can think back on, like, all the different people we've encountered.
Yeah.
One of them is following you around. Like there was a hill dwarf who had a hammer of excavating, or there was the wood dwarf that we saved, or there's the basic elf, or
hey there, Sombrera. Did you consider going out with me?
So he's following you around. If you don't say pretty quickly, I'm just going to choose for you. But there are also people who are like potentially working for you. In other words, like there are people who are into you and what you're doing, and you can kind of assign things to them, and they'll kind of go and do it, and then they'll come back later in the adventure potentially with an answer. That's sort of the function I'm thinking of, as well as like annoying you and getting in your way.
Okay.
A little of both.
Oh, that's good.
So for you, it's you have 38 or 39 of these guys. Let's roll.
But I have my lead cleric.
Your lead cleric. Describe him or her.
So I have my lead cleric, who's kind of the diplomat that kind of says what the clerics are feeling or thinking, or any issues that the clerics are having. He comes to me with any grievances.
And is he tall or short? Is he
He's tall. He looks like an anime character come to life, because of course that's my thing. With like really long, like Bishonen hair that's white, that covers up one of his eyes.
Ooh. Is there like a thing between you two?
I mean, I'm still asexual, so I don't care. But I do. He's very pretty.
Okay. All right. Cool. Okay, great. Okay, so the basic elf is following you around, and he has a proposal for you. Cerulean, do you have a thought about who's following you?
Oh, yeah. So I was thinking,
there was that tree.
Oh, a tree?
Well, no, but tell me what you were thinking of.
Maybe Croquella. Okay.
Croquella is an avatar of the world tree that I helped out. Mm-hmm. And maybe, like, a piece of him is capable of, like, coming off and forming something that he's been tracking me with.
Shrub.
Or she. It's not really clear. It's It's Croquella. Croquella can't actually, can only eat and cannot poop. And so everything that Croquella eats becomes a part of Croquella. Yeah.